This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, thank you for staying tuned. I'm Wong Shaoning, and this is the Morning Run with Roshan Gunnison. It is now 7:18 in the morning, Thursday, 1st of October. But in about half an hour, we'll be speaking to Kong Lin Lung, SME Chairman at the Associated Chinese Chamber of Commerce and Industry of Malaysia, to discuss how the ending of the loan moratorium will impact SMEs. But in the meantime, let's talk about carbon tax, because last week, the Secretary General of the Environment and Water Ministry, Dato Sri Zaini Ujang, made some, I would say, intriguing comments on Malaysia's climate change efforts in a webinar hosted by the CIMB Group. Zaini said that the government was currently revising the Environment Quality Act 1974 to include climate change and sustainability, as well as mandate greenhouse gas management and reporting. He then also mooted the idea of a carbon tax on future investments and said that the government may consider drafting a new climate change act. The proposal for a carbon pricing regime had also been raised under the previous administration, Pakatan Harapan, but in July last year, the minister in charge then, Yeo Bee-in, said that the government had no immediate plans to introduce such a program. So the question is, of course, should this government pursue this policy? And to better understand what a carbon tax would entail and how it would look like, we speak to Darshan Joshi, lead researcher at the think tank REFSA. Good morning. Thanks for joining us, Darshan. Can you help us understand how carbon taxes would work in general?
Okay, so carbon taxes are a form of carbon pricing, right? Or emissions pricing. And economists have long advocated for carbon pricing because it forces economic actors who burn fossil fuels for energy to internalize the externality costs of emissions. So carbon pricing is a way to force polluters to absorb these costs privately. Typically, there are two ways that carbon pricing is used. One, as you mentioned, is through a carbon tax. So this is fairly straightforward. For every ton of carbon that you emit, let's say you're a coal power plant and you emit 100 tons of carbon dioxide in a given year, and let's say the carbon price is 35 ringgit per ton. So then you'll pay that 100 tons times the 35 ringgit per ton, and you'll pay 3,500 ringgit in carbon taxes. So the same logic we can apply to any sector. We can apply it to industrial processes, manufacturing, construction, waste, oil and gas production, all of them. So another form of carbon pricing that we see in use around the world are cap and trade schemes. So these are used across Europe, and some countries in Europe even have hybrid cap and trade and carbon tax systems. We see them in China, parts of the US, even Australia and New Zealand. So the key distinction between the carbon tax and the cap and trade scheme is that the tax puts an explicit price on carbon, whereas a cap and trade scheme puts a cap on the total amount of emissions that you're going to allow in a certain year. And then it's up to companies to trade these permits, and they can pollute up to that specific amount.
Darshan, in your assessment, how successful have carbon tax policies been in actually reducing emissions based on the experience of other countries then?
It really depends on the design of the policy, the survivability of the policy, and to a degree, it also depends on politics. So there's clear evidence that carbon pricing has played a role in emissions reductions in the EU and Scandinavia. And Scandinavia, that's where carbon taxes first really started. So Finland was the first country to adopt a carbon tax in 1990. And it's also had success in some American and Canadian states. Even in Australia, they had a carbon tax in the early 2010s. And evidence was starting to build that their carbon tax was having an effect reducing emissions. But then politics came into the equation and the carbon tax was repealed.
Yeah, but currently we have no details about Malaysia's proposed carbon tax at this stage. And the calculations of this are quite technical, which we don't have the time to go into. But in a simple terms, how would you actually envision such a tax?
So the way I envision Malaysia's carbon tax policy is that we start by using a price that's roughly equivalent to our country-level social cost of carbon. So that's about 33 to 40 ringgit per ton of carbon dioxide. So this equals to an 8-cent increase in the price of petrol per litre. And for a family of four, probably around a 10 ringgit increase in the monthly electricity bill. So it's not such a large difference in the cost that consumers will face. But the thing is, we need to keep ramping this figure up over time, because at the end of the day, to fully internalize the externality, we need to try to reach the global level social cost of carbon. And this approach is also sort of a form of insurance, because future climate agreements may entail the need for a global carbon pricing scheme. And if we domestically can push ourselves towards that point, when it comes to having to transition to that global scheme, we will, one, have already decarbonized a lot relative to where we are now. And number two, adopting that global price isn't going to be such a huge shock to the system. The second aspect of beyond price is scope of the policy, where we need to hit the most polluting sectors. So a third of Malaysia's emissions come from electricity generation. Another 20% comes from transport. And another 20% comes from the production processes in the oil and gas industry. So if I were to design the carbon tax policy, I would start by targeting these three key sectors. And then finally, what we do with the revenues matters a lot. So with COVID-19, it's highlighted how important it is for us to have a stronger social safety net in Malaysia, where low-income households were already struggling before the crisis, and the situation's only gotten worse now. So let's use the revenues from a carbon tax policy to fund more generous transfers to low-income households. Let's use the revenues to fund more mitigation action and more adaptation action as well.
And what kind of climate change policies would you like to see the Malaysian government pursue if, let's say, new legislation is really on the cards?
From my perspective, the foundational element of our climate change policy in the future has to be carbon pricing. Because this is the only way that we can solve the market failure that causes climate change. We need to price carbon so that the costs that emissions impose on the country are recognized. And then beyond that, we should use targeted instruments that meet two objectives. One, we want to boost local development and production and deployment of low carbon technologies. And two, we want to create jobs in these key sectors, because these will be the long-term jobs, and the green economy is a strategic future-proof sector. So jobs in areas like renewable energy and forest preservation and management, in urban and vertical farming, production of low emissions vehicles, all that. We want to make sure that we have policies that can boost growth in these sectors and can create jobs in these sectors. And whether this is done through public investment, through, you know, reusing the carbon tax revenues, or through public-private partnerships, and then all this combined with the effects that carbon pricing has on markets will put us in a much better spot, I would say, in the long run.
Thank you for your time. That was Darshan Joshi, lead researcher with the think tank REFSA, giving us his views on the carbon tax and why he thinks is necessary. Now, I just see quite a bit of resistance to such a legislation if it were to happen, for a few reasons. One, of course, is that cost of living pressures would increase, because you're talking about an 8-cent increase in a litre of petrol, as much as a $10 increase per month in electricities. And that's just for families, right? So for businesses, of course, things will also go up, because they'll have to pay eventually a tax for the amount of pollution they cause, or it could be a form of a cap and trade or a hybrid of it, which is what we're seeing in Europe. So, you know, I would say Malaysians, unfortunately, the environmental issues don't come to the forefront, although it's clearly important. What do you think, Roshan?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I did was calculate, do a bit of math there, right? So an 8-cent increase to the price of petrol, if I'm not mistaken, RON 95 is going for 168 right now or thereabouts. That's a 5% increase to the price of petrol right there. 5% is not a small amount, right? 6% GST and people were already feeling that. 6% SST people were also not happy with. So if you're not going to pay something like GST or SST, what about a 5% increase to your petrol price because of carbon? Something that it is an unfamiliar concept, right, to most people. 10 ringgit in a monthly electricity bill, not sure. I guess that depends on the size of the household. But it really struck me in sense of where the biggest carbon polluters come from, right? A third is power generation, 20% is transport, 20% is oil and gas production. I would have assumed that transport was the biggest, but apparently that's not the case. So if we can transition more of our power production to more renewables in the longer term, then maybe we can do that without a carbon tax, right? But it has to come from a government effort, I guess.
Yeah, I think we are actually looking at a holistic renewable energy transition roadmap that was supposed to be due in the 12th Malaysian plan, but has somewhat been delayed. I think we're only going to find out about that next year. So it's always going to be the question about how you balance development with a greener economy. But up next, we'll be speaking to Andrew Cohen. He's the Associate Professor at Carleton University for his impressions on the yesterday's US presidential debate. That's happening after the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.